It's time to think big with Big Alaska Guests, Big Alaska Adventures, and No Good Lying Through Your Tooth, Tall Alaska Tales. It's the Big Alaska Show. Broadcasting from the studios of a remote cabin outside Bolchitna and streamed worldwide at KFQD.com with podcasts streamed at BigAlaskaShow.com. I'm Mike Ford with Uncle Steve and some Big Alaska Show friends. We're talking about Alaska Nelly as author and historian Doug Capra joins us. Designed to raise your spirits, not your blood pressure, unless you're a guy named Mike Ford. Good morning, everyone. It's the Big Alaska Show.
Good morning, and thanks for joining us on the Big Alaska Show. I'm Uncle Steve. I'm here with my good buddy and co-host Mike Ford. And Mike, today's guest is Doug Capra. We've had him on before. He's an author, he's a historian, he's a lecturer, and he's out of Seward, Alaska. He's written a book, in fact, on our Big Alaska Show book review section called The Spaces Between. And it's about the lives of seemingly common people that have quite extraordinary Alaskan experiences. One of the chapters is on a woman by the name of Alaska Nelly, who was back in the early 1900s, but a really colorful woman that really bordered on legend.
She was so famous, we didn't even get her last name. She's kind of like the Madonna of her time.
Alaska Nelly. Actually, to your point, people would write letters to Alaska Nelly, and she would get it.
One little snippet you were telling me about how she found the postman frozen to a sled. I don't want to give too much away.
No.
But that right there, that's a good story.
And that's why she became legendary.
Yeah.
And so that's part of it. But there's so much to it that this is what we consider part one. But it gives you a real sense of we're talking about Alaska Nelly.
So he knows that after he's been on this show, he's still willing to come back?
No,
that's awesome. Hats off to you.
Yes. But anyway, So today's show is going to be talking to Doug Capra and talking about his lecture he did recently, and we're going to learn all about Alaska Nelly. She did have a last name. It was Alaska Neal, and then she got married more than once, and So it's one of those. But anyway, thanks for everybody joining us in the Big Alaska Show. But of course, Mike, we'd be remiss if we didn't start the Big Alaska Show out the right way.
That's right, and we never let Harley near this coffee.
Beagle gas. Folks, the key to doing an early morning radio show, especially an early Saturday morning radio show, is a strong cup of coffee. And there's no stronger cup of Joe than Big Alaska Show Blend, the intense early morning coffee for intense early morning indigestion. That's why it's preferred coffee for Alaskan authors. Writing is no easy task, and waking up early to put words together that actually make sense sometimes requires a little motivational attitude adjustment. Enter Big Alaska Show Blend to the rescue. Just one sip of this caffeine-packed pile of dirt jumpstarts wordsmiths with an energetic boost to generate flowing phrases that may not make any more sense, but will certainly blister the ears of the censors. Bitter biting with a specific gravity of basalt. Big Alaska Show Blend. The intense early morning coffee for intense early morning gas. That's how we roll here at the Big Alaska Show. But stick around. We have more Big Alaska Show coming up. And you can hear our show streamed and get podcasts at BigAlaskaShow.com.
And welcome back to the Big Alaska Show. I'm Mike Ford with Uncle Steve. Our show brought to you in part by Neighbors Windows and Doors. They're Alaska's window experts for windows, doors, shower doors, affordable glass replacement. Neighbors Windows and Doors at 6251 Tunnel or online anytime at neighborswindowsanddoors.com.
And welcome back to the Big Alaska Show. Today, our guest is Doug Capra. He's an author, historian out of Seward, Alaska. In fact, one of his books we have in our Big Alaska Show book review section, The Spaces Between, in which he has stories about people that have quite interesting Alaskan lives, you know, just seemingly common people. And today we're talking Alaska Nelly. Our guest is author, he's an educator, he's a lecturer. I'm a big fan of Doug. We have his book, The Spaces Between, Stories from the Kenai Mountains to the Kenai Fjords by Doug Capra. You can find it on our BigAlaskaShow.com website. It's an awesome book. It's a great history. And Doug is a longtime citizen of Seward, Alaska. Please give a warm Big Alaska Show welcome to Doug Capra. So the last time we talked, Doug, you were down in California with family. I met your son, The Spaces Between. We've got a few podcasts with you besides being on the Big Alaska Book Review section. One of the chapters was really interesting to me is this character, Alaska Nelly. And you just finished doing a lecture on this. I mean, there's so much here to cover. When people ask who is Alaska Nelly or Nelly Neal, what do you tell them?
Well, I tell them Nelly was a woman, came to Alaska at the age of 42 in 1915, had a very interesting life. I mean, you can imagine when people come to Alaska midway through life, they've had a life. And, you know, part of what I tell people is part of the history of Alaska, at least a major theme of frontiers like Alaska, is that many people come to Alaska to begin their lives over again. They want to reinvent themselves. They're going to a place where nobody knows them, nobody knows their past, and so they don't have to worry about that. They can just be judged on who they are, and that's kind of a theme in among people who lived in Alaska, too. And so Nelly was one of these people who came that way. And as a matter of fact, I did two lectures on Nelly this summer. In May, I did one for the Kenai Peninsula Historical Association, and that one was called Alice and Nelly, and it was about her relationship, her close friendship with a silent screen star named Alice Calhoun, and how Alice eventually helped Nelly get her book published and helped to create what we know today as the legend of Alaska Nelly. And the one I did on Thursday what day was that? I think it was the 25th. It was the 25th of July. That was Nelly's birthday, 151 years old she would have been. I did that for the senior center, for the seniors, but a lot of other people showed up. And there I talked a little bit more about the difficult life that Nelly had before she came to Alaska. I called it the Nelly we never knew. Okay, we knew the Nelly that she became, and very few, if any, people knew about the life she came from.
One of the things I caught in your email was Nelly had this theatrical persona. She was just this real colorful character. But as you get into her life, what a difficult life. I mean, this women coming to Alaska, I mean, that time, I mean, when we moved up here with my mom, that was still a very challenge for women. What year was that? 1917 she came in?
1915
at 42. Talk a little bit about what made her so colorful.
What made her so colorful?
Yeah.
I think it was part of her personality, probably from the time that she was a little girl. She didn't have much formal education. In fact, I think she always resented that. She came from, we got to go back and talk a little bit about her family. She was born in 1873 in Missouri, in St. Joseph, Missouri, but her family had a farm in western Missouri, maybe about a dozen miles. And it was a hard farming life. She was the oldest of 12 children. So as I always tell people, in a farming family, with 12 children, and you're the oldest girl, you become the surrogate mother.
Oh, yeah.
Particularly, her mother wasn't very healthy. So, I mean, she loved learning. She loved school, but she was pulled out of school at age 13 because she had to work on the farm and she had to take care of the kids. Her mother was getting kind of sickly. I mean, you can imagine women in those days, 12 children. And many of them had more, because some of them were every year, every other year they were pregnant, and it affected their health. Many husbands have two or three wives because their wives die. Mm-hmm. But I think Nellie was this kind of a little girl. She loved stories. She loved to read stories. She read about Alaska. She told her father she wanted to come to Alaska when she was a little girl, and her father just, no, you're not going to go. And if you talk about it anymore, you know, I'm going to punish you anymore. You got to be around here. So it was part of her personality. I think later she grew up in the West. She worked in later years. And we can talk more about the details of this later, but she worked for the Fred Harvey restaurant system on the Topeka Santa Fe Railroad. And so she probably ran into a lot of Western characters, you know, the Western storytellers, the old cowboys. She ended up in Cripple Creek, Colorado. And some people who knew her said, you know, I think there was a little bit of vaudeville in Nellie. That is, she might have done a little work in vaudeville, probably just to survive, among other things. But she had animals throughout her life, a lot of dogs. And I think she had trained some dogs. So, I mean, I think it was part of her personality to be outward, and she was just a natural storyteller.
You know, you talk about the Harvey girls. That was a service associated with the railroad?
Fred Harvey was an Englishman who came to this country, worked on the railroads, and he worked in the field of logistics. So he knew how to get things to places that the railroad needed. And as he traveled in his travels throughout the railroads, he noticed how terrible the hotels were, and the food service, and all the corruption and all of that. And so he said, we can do better than that. So he got a contract with Topeka Santa Fe to build the hotels and the restaurants and everything. And he just built a beautiful system. So there are some of his Fred Harvey houses that are still around today. Some are part of National Park Services, because he got embedded in the National Park Service. But he created the whole concept of real customer service and hospitality. And Nellie learned all that from him. In fact, they used to say, the historians say, Fred Harvey populated the West, because he would put all these ads in East newspapers to get these young girls to come out and have an adventure in the West working for him. And he took care of these young girls. He didn't abuse them or anything. But within a couple of years, they'd meet a cowboy and get married and move to the West. And so he populated the West by bringing all these young women out from the East Coast.
It sounded like his system was so innovative for Nellie to be mentored in that environment. From what I read in your book, like in Cripple Creek, she worked in these different...
She had a rooming house, boarding houses.
And there you go.
She fed and housed. She fed and there was a big... The Cripple Creek mining district was a big mining district. And so she was housing these miners and feeding these miners. And when she came to Alaska, that's what she did during the building of the Alaska Railroad. She housed the people that were building the Alaska Railroad. And she housed the mushers that were, and all the other workers involved in the Alaska Railroad.
So when she came to Alaska, she was a seasoned, experienced businesswoman.
Oh, absolutely. Yes, yes. Yeah, absolutely. In fact, she used to say, Fred Harvey used to teach her, anybody can please a gentleman. Your job is to please the cranks.
Yeah.
Harvey had a lot of expressions like that that she carried with him.
Just a little side thing. When I was at San Francisco State, I worked at one of the best seafood restaurants in the city called the Waterfront Restaurant. As soon as you walked in, it was consistently good service. You're welcomed, seated right away. The server would stop by, mention something to you. There would be a guy that would pour the water and all that stuff. I mean, it was just this system they had. And the bathrooms were always clean. The portions, it was always just solidly consistent. But I saw the owner one time have a guy who was just so red-faced, and his veins were probably, he was so upset. And Al Falke just listened to this guy and just waited till he finished. And then he took the guy's bill, tore it up, gave him a card and says, I'm going to comp this meal. I'm going to get you another one. He says, you come in, we'll give you another meal. And he sent him home with a couple of bottles of wine. I mean, I'll always remember that. And the one thing he told me was never interrupt somebody who's angry because they'll just start over. I just want you to take care of the cranks is brilliant.
Yeah. As you probably know, I don't know if you do, I wrote a play about Nellie. It's a one-woman show. It ran in Seward for 5 summers. It hasn't run for a number of years, where she tells, she's out at 23 miles north of Seward at her boarding house at Lawing along Kenai Lake. And when the railroad went by, the trains could, she was so well known after the railroad went through that the trains would stop and let the tourists off to visit her, and she'd sell her book, which eventually she'd sell her book there. But she told them stories. She used to tell stories about how Harvey would break up fights and everything. You can imagine, Harvey was very well-dressed Englishman. And so you can imagine when a couple of these cowboys are getting into a fight and they're drunk, and this very well-dressed Englishman starts talking to them in a very nice English accent.
Yes.
You know, he had this way of calming everything down and yet telling them very nicely that you're not going to get away with this. This isn't allowed here. She loved to tell stories about him.
The story she would tell when people stopped by, I mean, she had this connection with Hollywood. How'd that come about?
Well, that's a very interesting story. And sometime in the 1930s, I don't know exactly when, but a pretty well-known Hollywood screen star, silent screen star named Alice Calhoun, visited Alaska with her mother. I'm going to say probably maybe 1932, 1933. Could have been in the late 20s. I'm not exactly sure. She wasn't the top level star like Mary Pickford. Mary Pickford would be the A level star. Alice Calhoun was like the B level star.
Sure.
she had been a child star. She had started off at the age of 16. And as she got more parts, she played a lot of movies where she played women in the West and women in Canada and in Alaska. And we have scenes of her mushing dogs and everything like that. Eventually, she became fed up with the Hollywood system. And her mother was ill, too. So they decided to take a trip. She got out of it. She came to Alaska. And being on the Alaska Railroad, she meets Nellie. And here she meets the woman that she's been playing in all these movies, the real thing, you see. And they become very close. I mean, Nellie is much older than Alice, and she's like a mother figure to her.
Oh, yeah.
I'll tell you how close they were. In later years, Alice went through at least 3 or 4 marriages. When she was between marriages in the late 30s, she made Nellie the executor of her will.
Wow.
That's how close they were.
Yeah.
And later, as we go on, I assume there's going to be a part two to this probably.
Yeah.
We can go into more of that story, because you got to know a little bit more about Alice and their relationship.
Just so people know, this is the thing about Doug is a very in-depth historian and does solid research. And out of that comes a lot of stories, a lot of information. And this character is such a colorful character that has so many aspects to her. Yes, there's going to be a part two to this, because I know each one of these little adventures is a chapter. But I did want to get people to give a real sense of, I mean, this woman comes to Seward at the age of 42. What was the age expectancy at that time, do you think? 42?
The book that she eventually wrote is called Alaska Nellie. And she writes about it in here. When she came to Alaska, after she got a job, actually her first job was as a nanny, with Virginia Darling, who was Virginia Hawkins. She was the daughter of Brown and Hawkins. Later she became a marriage name, Virginia Darling. I knew Virginia, and Virginia told me as a baby, Nellie was her nanny for a while. Then Nellie got a job with the Kenai Alaska Mining Company, probably about 26, 27 miles out of Seward. Elevation of about 4,700 feet. She worked for them. But after that first season, she was a meat hunter. She cooked for them. She caught firewood for them. She did all this stuff. After that season, she had found an old trapper's cabin out in the wilderness near that area while she was hunting. And so she spent the winter all alone in that trapper's cabin, trapping to make a grub steak, but also considering, what am I going to do now? I'm 42 years old. Am I going to just keep moving around? She writes about that in the book. Hill, and she says, "Nope, this is it. This is it. I'm here now. This is where I'm going to be. I'm here to stay."
And stick around. We have more with Alaska Nelly right after this.
And welcome back to the Big Alaska Show. I'm Mike Ford with Uncle Steve. Our show brought to you in part by Alaska Enterprise Solutions. They're your authorized sales agent for Xerox in Alaska. Call Mike Ferris or visit him anytime at aesalaska.com.
We come to you each Saturday, 9:05 to 10 a.m., right here on KFQD at 103.7 FM, 750 AM. We're streamed worldwide at KFQD.com. And you can find our podcast at BigAlaskaShow.com. We're listening to author Doug Capra talking about Alaska Nelly. And here's more about Alaska Nelly with Doug Capra.
You know, the other thing I was reading in your the spaces between, I mean, she must have been in great shape because the mileage she would cover in the snow and carrying things. This woman's an athlete, man.
Tell you a story. During the war, many women were evacuated out of Alaska. She joined a military auxiliary. We see her in a uniform during the war. She stayed in Alaska, was out there at Lawing, 23 miles north of Seward, where her lodge was. Soldiers would come to visit her from Fort Raymond in Seward. We have a lot of pictures of soldiers with her. And there's this recording that I have of these soldiers telling the story of visiting Nellie. Two of them went out there, and they'd visit with her, and she'd always feed them something. She was a great hostess, and she was a great patriot. She fed them some food, and then they said, "Can we do anything for you to help you?" And she said, "Yeah." She said, "Down by the tracks, down by the lake, there are a couple of railroad ties. Would you bring them up for me?" So they went down there. Then they came back, and they said, "Boy, those are heavy. Do you have a wheelbarrow or something?" And Nellie just looked at them and said, "You guys." And she went down there, and she put one under each arm and carried them back up. This would have been during the war when she was probably in her 60s.
Oh, my gosh.
The soldiers remembered that. It was an incident they never forgot. Put them to shame.
I mean, there was so many of these stories I was reading where she ends up, the mailman didn't show up.
Yeah, the mail carrier story.
The mail carrier, he doesn't show up. And so she goes out looking for him, finds him, brings him back, and then she goes and delivers everything.
That's one of the first stories that makes her famous in Alaska. People get to know her, that story. The tracks only went from Seward up to 71 miles, which is up by Kern Creek. And then the tracks stopped. Okay. And then they picked up an anchorage and they went up north. So as the mail came into Seward, particularly in the winter, remember Cook Inlet got frozen up in the winter. Mm-hmm. So the mail ships couldn't get in. So the mail would come to Seward. And then the mushers would take it, or the train would take it as far as tracks went. And then it would go up by dog sled. And then it would come, you know, and same mail going out of Anchorage would come down the same way. Well, one time the mail carrier usually stopped at Nellie's place, and he didn't show up one time. So she went out looking for him, and she went to a place that they used to call Hell's Acres back then. It was probably out by the area of Grandview, maybe mile 46, very rough area in the wintertime. She went out there. She found him almost frozen to his sled. And so she helped him out. She got the dogs, took him and the dogs back to her lodge and got him settled and everything. And then she remembered she forgot to get the mail. So she went back again. And this is in the midst of a whiteout and a storm. She went back again and she got the mail. And then she brought it to the train, who was waiting. The train had just been waiting, on the north end, waiting. And she brought to them, and boy, were they surprised to find out, you know, the mail would, and it was her that delivered it. They were expecting the mail musher. Well, a bunch of the old timers, Nellie writes this in her book. A bunch of the old timers, as an award, they gave her a gold nugget necklace, and we often see her wearing that necklace in the pictures. And they sent her a little note, and she writes the note in her book. She says, it says, "To Nellie from old timers who on snowshoes broke down the trail, who fought the elements to take through the mail, who struggled on without food or rest to rescue the perishing, she did her best." And they signed it, and their names were Tin Can George, Post Hole Pete, Snaggletooth Miller, Porcupine Patty, and T-Bone Clark.
And I read she wore that for all of her life.
Yes, and unfortunately, I think in her later years, for example, in the 50s, early 50s, before she died, she was often in and out of the hospital and so on. And as far as I can determine, it was stolen.
I thought about that when I was reading that part and just how tragic.
She ended in almost poverty, really.
When you were talking about your lecture the other day, how the persona, the legend, you separate that from, you know, the tougher part of her existence and the stuff that we don't hear about. And that incident with the postal worker, that basically established the legend. That's where she started, I guess, gaining her popularity.
About that same time, she shot a record brown bear that attacked her.
Yes.
It attacked her. She went after it. And I have found evidence that this is a true story. There was an article in the Pioneers magazine from that period in the 1920s. Pioneers magazine was called The Pathfinder. And there was an article in here about that bear. So, yeah. I mean, it became legendary, but it is based on a true story.
In the book, she talks about that. She had a pet bear, a pet black bear. She goes out to feed it, and that's when she encounters the big brown bear. So she hides in the barn or someplace, and it tries to break in. So she's pushing against it and fighting it off by not letting it in. But she hears it go and find her pet bear, who kills it and is going out to bury it. And her comment is, "I'd had enough." And so she goes out after it. My heart melted because it's sort of like Old Yeller. I can just imagine how horrible that must have been for her. And boy, she was mad.
Yeah. In later years, after the book came out and she traveled the country with Alice, she traveled with Alice Calhoun on these book tours. And even before then, when she traveled, she'd tell that story. I found at least three or four different versions of it. The newspaper reporters would all write it. They'd write the story down. So I found different versions of it. But I mean, the essence of it is there. In the play that I wrote, when I put it together, I try to grab different parts of the different stories, because I mean, who the heck knows what really happened? So we'll just put the best story together.
You talk about autobiographies tend to get embellishments, especially over time.
And with Nellie's case, and with a lot of women writers in the period, and that's one of the things that we can talk about eventually. In those days, women didn't feel entitled or permission to talk about the truth when they wrote. I mean, it wasn't the culture. They weren't supposed to talk about certain things, or they didn't feel empowered to do it in the culture. And so I think, in fact, I'll get into this now since we're bringing it up. In the scrapbook, Nellie's scrapbook that we have here at the Resurrection Bay Historical Society, there's an obituary of a woman named Ann Ellis. And Ann Ellis was a writer. And one of the famous books that she wrote is called The Life of an Ordinary Woman. And what makes it really distinctive is that this book, in this book, she is willing to really tell the truth about what life was like for a woman. It was published in 1928. Okay. Nellie put that obituary in there because I think she probably knew Ellis, because Ellis was eventually in Cripple Creek. Nellie and Alice and Ellis had a lot in common. They were both from Missouri. They both grew up on farms. They were both the oldest of a large family, everything like that. They had so many things. So the things that Ellis tells about her early life, I think, I don't want to say they're exactly like Nellie, but I think Nellie had a very similar life. Let me just show you something in here. And this is in her book. Just going to read a short portion of it here. Chapter 3, which is called Mother. She talks about her mother in later years, before Nellie leaves home. Her mother is getting ill. And she says, here's a typical Nellie sentence in these early pages of her autobiography. Many disagreeable circumstances of the past few years began now to cause much grief. Now, I mean, what circumstances? We're not told, okay? Her mother was hopeful that conditions would enable the eldest children to attend school much longer, but that was not to be. So we can assume some of these things of grief were about the poverty that they were in. They couldn't attend school. The kids had to get out of school to work on the farm. At this time, we attended the ordinary country school. The hands of fate rang down the curtain on my school days before I was 14 years old. That would be 1886, okay? So that sentence is 1886. Here's the next sentence. My brother, Harry, enlisted at Fort Leavenworth, Kansas, and went to the Spanish-American War. So the next sentence goes to 1898. She stops that sentence at age 13, which is 1886. The next sentence begins in 1898, 12 missing years. Boom, they're just gone. And there's so many other instances in this book. In fact, in this book, if you look at her book is, let me tell you, her book is 201 pages long, okay? The first 43 pages, almost the years of her life, the first 43 pages are pages before she came from Seward. From 44, from page 44 onto page 201 is Seward. So figure out, so much of the book in her early life, she gives us little hints. And later, in part two, we can talk about these hints and some of the research I've done to find out what really happened in those early years.
Going back to what you were saying earlier about how women would have babies year after year after year, which sounds like, and so I'm wondering in what physical condition her mother was in. Now, for a historian like you, when you see that big a gap, do you try to pursue something more? I mean, were you trying to find out more about that, or you just flow with what you got?
Well, you can't flow with what you got there. So, yeah. I tried to learn more. I mean, all kinds of things. There was a clue. There was one clue that always intrigued me. In the archives in Seward here, among all the material that we have from Nellie, there are two commemorative spoons. One in particular is on one side of the spoon. It says Coffeyville, Kansas. Now, Coffeyville, I looked that up. Coffeyville, Kansas is on the Topeka Santa Fe rail line in the general area where I think Nellie was working during all these early years.
Interesting.
And on the other side of it is the name Bates, B-A-T-E-S. Okay, now for many years, that was just a mystery for me. But then I finally found when she was in Cripple Creek, she went to Cripple Creek. I thought she had gone to Cripple Creek as Nellie Trosper. Nellie Trosper was her born name, Nellie Trosper. So okay. I was looking for her. But I found her marriage certificate to Wesley Neal in Cripple Creek, and she's listed as Nellie Bates. So there's a marriage.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
That's a commemorative spoon. Then I went to Ellis, and I got to Ellis's book, reading Ellis's book. What happened to Ellis? Okay, Ellis is in the same circumstances. Okay, in fact, let me read to you from a review of Ellis's book. This is Ellis now.
Yes.
Ellis. She deeply resented her stepfather, who always had to have a room of his own to escape into, even though they usually lived in a tiny shotgun shack where Ellis and her mother and brothers and sisters often had to sleep in the kitchen. Ellis resented the new siblings her mother's produced, as she saw it, far too regularly, although she later regretted that. Ellis freely admits no one in the family paid much attention to her mother lay dying at 39. Okay, then Ellis, at about probably age 15 or 16, she runs away with the first man who paid any attention to her, just to get out.
Sure.
We're talking about what Nellie did. One of the reasons why Nellie admired Ellis in this book, these are some of the possibilities. We know now there was another marriage. My guess is that Nellie just left. She did get married. She worked on the Fred Harvey system on the Topeka Say. I know the area she worked in. Coffeyville was that area. She may be going back home every once in a while to help out, but she's pretty much left. She doesn't have a very good relationship with her father. We'll see later. Her mother dies. Her father remarries, and Nellie says, "I'm leaving. I'm going to leave for good now." And her father says, "No, you're not." Nellie's 28 years old, and her father, her father's still telling her, "No, you need to stay." You see, so yeah. These are just some of the things that we can put together, some of these things of what's going on in her life.
Something I've grown really to appreciate your background as a historian is the painstaking, slow process, just tenacious, and looking for clues. Now, Nellie divorces Wesley.
Yeah.
And she heads to Washington.
I found this out not too long ago, maybe a year or so ago. Nellie was worth, I mean, Wesley Neal, in our money today, was probably worth about $3 million. He was an assayer. He dealt with the gold miners and everything. So he probably had money invested in their mines and everything like that. Yes, she gets to Cripple Creek in 1903, and she marries Wesley in 1906. Now, I just want to point this out. The chapter in her book on Cripple Creek, she describes in quite a bit of detail from a personal point of view the tremendous violence that is going on there among the miner strikes in the Cripple Creek mining district. And I did the research on what was really going on, and Nellie's description is extremely accurate. It was some of the worst strike violence going on in the country in the Cripple Creek district. Well, anyway, she meets Wesley Neal. They marry in 1906. Wesley is an alcoholic. There are a lot of clues Nellie gives us. This is in her book. She writes, with the passing of time, and by the way, this is another gap. In that gap, 1907 and 1912, between 1907 and 1912, those years just disappear. And she writes it, with the passing of time, many unhappy situations caused me mental and physical distress. This is when she's in Cripple Creek. My home life was made unbearable by that demon rum, which destroys the best in a man. The existing conditions in my home, I will not mention, but leave to the imagination. When you do the research on domestic violence and alcoholism in the West, you don't have to have an imagination to figure out what's going on. Okay, so Nellie later she writes, the place in which I spent the noonday of my life, that was Cripple Creek, with only hard work and heartaches as compensation, became a thing of dread to me. That's probably what's happening when she's in Cripple Creek.
Yeah. And well, she divorces this guy and bolts. Exactly. Did she have a job to go to when she went to Washington?
Well, I think she had some connections in Kansas City with these, what would you call them, employment agencies that helped get her job. So when she leaves, we'll talk about this in part two, because she just doesn't leave Cripple Creek. There's an incident that happens that we'll talk about that, we can go into in the next part if you'd like. But she goes to Kansas City and she gets some more work, and she heads off through the West, spending a couple of years working in the Fred Harvey systems and other hotels and everything. She ends up in Seattle. And in 1914, big news is the building of the Alaska Railroad, but where's the terminus going to be? Okay. And then March 1915, Seward is selected as the terminus. And wow, that's when Nellie gets on a steamship and heads north. She wants to become the Fred Harvey of the Alaska Railroad.
In the book she's written, where you say 40 pages is dedicated before she even goes to Alaska, now you realize what a seasoned veteran she was.
Oh, yeah.
What a remarkable character, Doug.
She had been a hunter and trapper as a little girl. And, you know, it wasn't just a hobby. I mean, it was food for the family. She knew how to hunt. She knew how to trap. So she had all these skills. And then she's developing, and she was, from what I can determine, Nellie was a quick learner. In fact, let me see if I can find this for you, because this is very interesting.
Is there any recordings of her at all?
Yeah, there was. We have one recording of her doing an interview on radio. Let's see if I can get that to you. I might have it. I might have a digital copy. Unfortunately, it's not the real Nellie, because I have a copy of the script they forced her to read. You couldn't get Nellie to read a script. That would be like tying up a Mustang horse, you know, limping her way through this script. So we don't get a good idea of her. How I got to know how she really talked was by reading newspaper reports as she traveled the country and telling these stories. The reporters had this form of shorthand that they could use, so they could write down everything that she's saying, just the way she's saying. And I got a good sense of that. Plus, by listening to people telling me how she talked and everything, people who heard her talk. Nellie was one of these people, an intelligent person, not just intellectually intelligent, but socially intelligent. A lot of women are much more socially intelligent than men. I mean, they can look around at social situations and see what's going on, and then they can move right into these social situations, people not knowing anything about their background. Let me read this to you. This is from the Seattle Star. But it's about Nellie. going to, she's visiting Alice Calhoun in Hollywood, and Hollywood takes her to all these meetings with stars and what do they call it when they have a meeting with openings and things like that. Yeah. Here's a description of Nellie. This is probably from about 1937, 1938. Here's the description. As I sat with Nellie, I watched her demeanor at banquet table and cocktail room. I couldn't imagine her as the woman who has stood face to face with death a dozen times, the woman who fought it out with a grizzly bear, the woman who helped disarm bandits, the woman who cherishes that gold nugget necklace, her reward for saving the life of an Alaska mail carrier. Yes, Nellie would make a darn good movie. She is a lady, an educated, charming personality who can assume the proper manners whenever she makes her periodical visits outside. See, Nellie, she knew how to fit in. And she probably learned that a lot of that was innate to her. But I think a lot of this she learned by working with Fred Harvey.
Yeah, exactly. She probably was interested in people and liked to talk to people. But going through Harvey's system really polished her, gave her that professionalism. But the incident she has where she's being robbed, where did that happen? And the guy knocked her teeth out.
That's interesting because she's in Cripple Creek. And the time she got robbed, she was in her house, in her home. She's married to Wesley Neal. And as she writes in her book, people thought we carried a lot of money in the house because he was so wealthy and he was an assayer and everything else. So a robber came in and she was beaten severely. She really was. I mean, it was no joke. She was hit on the head with a crowbar or something like that. She was bleeding profusely. She writes about it very accurately in the book. Later, when she told those stories, she kind of makes, she doesn't make it so serious and everything, but she was really hurt. After that, she had to be around Wesley's area. She said, I carried a Colt 45. So when he was traveling, she would sit in the office because there was probably a safe in the office and there was money in that safe. So she'd sit in his office while he was gone. And she said, she's got her Colt 45 with her. So she tells the story in her book. One night she's sitting there and she's reading the Cripple Creek Times and a man just walks into the office and she gets suspicious of him. She gets the gun ready. It's out under the Times. And all of a sudden he comes at her. In the book, she's pretty accurate. She says, I just shot wherever I could shoot. Not aim, just blam, 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 blam. And he took off. Of course, later when she tells the story, I shot that gun right out of his hand.
Yeah, I know. That's one I was wondering if you thought that had been embellished.
But, a lot of her stories are embellished. But with Nellie, even if half of them are true. In fact, I found a newspaper article from the Denver Post about that attack in her home. So, I mean, these are true stories.
Can you imagine what it must have been to hang around Alaska Nellie and Alice Calhoun?
Together. Well, yes. I often wonder because Alice, Alice's background too, just Alice had an alcoholic father too, who could be very violent.
Mm-hmm.
And so you will never know this, but I just wonder if there were certain things they didn't have in common that may have actually talked about. I don't know. But what brought them together, I think probably was some kind of a similar background in some respects.
For beginners wanting to ride a motorcycle, take the Basic Rider Course from Abate of Anchorage, Alaska Bikers Advocating Training and Education. This course provides the basic entry-level skills important for developing the mental and motor skills for a safer street operation. Spread over 2 days, this course provides in-depth instruction and hours of hands-on riding experience. Abate provides lightweight, easy-to-maneuver motorcycles. Classes fill up fast. For Basic Rider or other motorcycle course information, visit learntoridealaska.com.
And welcome back to the Big Alaska Show. I'm Mike Ford with Uncle Steve. Our show brought to you in part by Neighbors Windows and Doors. They're Alaska's window experts for windows, doors, shower doors, affordable glass replacement. Neighbors Windows and Doors at 6251 Tunnel or online anytime at neighborswindowsanddoors.com.
Welcome back to the Big Alaska Show. Today our guest is Doug Capra. He's an author, historian, and lecturer out of Seward. and more about Alaska Nelly.
She had connections with President Harding, comes up. This woman rubbed shoulders with presidents.
Well, we have pictures of her with Harding. She goes up there at Nanana, where the Golden Spike was driven in by Harding in 1923 in July. She goes up there and is taking pictures of him. We have scenes of her with Harding. As the story goes, and this we don't know the truth of this, but could be true, is that Harding, when people went to her roadhouses, the workers went to her roadhouses to eat, they had a voucher. And they had to give a little voucher to her. And then she sent all those vouchers into D.C. to get paid. She had to sign them all. The story goes that Harding saw all these vouchers. He wanted to know, who the heck is this woman signing all these vouchers? So when he came to Alaska in July of 1923, he wanted to meet Nellie. He does. He meets her.
You know, reading the chapter on the spaces between is a really good introduction to her. In fact, I'm going to read to you the one thing you wrote in here. I thought it really set it up. You said, if there had been a director, he would have told the cameras to roll. If there had been a soundtrack, the music would have started. If there had been stage lights, they would have dimmed as the former Nellie Trosper, Nellie Bates, Nellie Neal Lawing gradually transforms into the legendary figure she had become, Alaska Nellie.
You've got to imagine, too, Alice Calhoun would send her all of her old costumes. So Nellie would put on one of those costumes. Yeah. For the that came and she'd, in her extra tufts, you know, her gum boots would be throwing up on the bottom of the costumes on her feet. She'd have this elegant costume on.
That's, you know, and one last thing. You talked about writing a one-act play. You did a one-person play about Nellie. And have you thought about bringing that back again?
Well, it's not that easy. I need an actress has to memorize about 35 pages of dialogue.
Yeah, yeah.
It's got to be some kind of a business deal where they're getting paid too much. But if I can find a venue, I'll get it back up again.
Yeah. Well, anyway, we're going to run out of time. I want to come in and do part two.
Sure. I mean, just as a little hint right now, we can talk more about her past life, things that happened in Cripple Creek, and the whole story of after she died. That's an interesting, I mean, I won't say anything, but, you know, after she died, the story doesn't end for a little while.
I'm all ears, man. And Doug, thanks for the hard work you put into this. I know this is your passion. This is what you do. But I get friends a lot posting on Facebook and you know, they've come through on the cruises, and they stopped at Denali, and they stopped at so-and-so, and they went and they kayaked and soared. But it's just a surface thing. They see all the beauty that surrounds us, but it's these stories that make this place so special. Man, I'll tell you, imagine what it'd be like if we didn't have what you've put together here. An excellent piece of work, I think. And
Thank you. It's, you know, as you say, it's the spaces between. It's about the people who live in the spaces between all the politics and all the wars and everything else. I mean, you got to give them the context. You got to give people the context of the wars and the politics and everything. But the average, ordinary, everyday people's lives, those are the people that live in the spaces between.
Thanks for taking time, Doug. Really appreciate it. And we're going to bring in part two of Alaska Nellie with Doug Capra very, very soon. Let's give Doug Capra a big Alaska show thank you and continued success.
So that's our show. And we'll be having Doug Capra back in the near future for part two of Alaska Nellie. We always say here at the Big Alaska Show, our show is about Alaskan spirit. And Alaska Nellie has shown that in spades. She also reminds us about the power of women and their impact on Alaska, and especially their resilience that's never ending. We often have women guests here at the Big Alaska Show, and it always reminds us that Alaska women are unique. And to my baby girl, love you, and Mike Ford, why don't you take us out as you so eloquently do?
All right, Uncle Steve, we want to thank Doug for joining us. We want to thank you for listening. And we want to thank our sponsors, Neighbors Windows and Doors, Alaska's Window Experts at 6251 Tuttle, or online anytime at neighborswindowsanddoors.com, and Alaska Enterprise Solutions. They're your authorized Xerox sales agent for Alaska. Visit them online at aesalaska.com. Remember, if it's Big Alaska Guests, Big Alaska Adventures, and no good line through your tooth, all Alaska Tales, it's gotta be the Big Alaska Show. Have a great week, everybody.
Replace fogged or broken window or door glass in any shape, any size, fast with insulated glass made in Alaska by Neighbors Windows and Doors. Plus, for a limited time, take $100 off every insulated glass unit with installation. Installation teams are fast and efficient. Quotes are quick. Just text or email a couple of photos and rough dimensions to Neighbors Windows and Doors. For savings, free estimates, friendly service, and a lifetime warranty with installation, visit neighborswindowsanddoors.com. And thank you for buying local.